Bushun in din away magani dug, beshigo benesia quay indigo, mang in du dame, ga os esquajime cog in dun jaba, ga mesqua wako cog, ninda, Elaine Fleming in dishin a cause. Hello, all my relatives, and I am one Thunderbird woman. That's the name that the universe knows me by. I'm with the Loon Clan, and I am a member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is a part of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe Incorporated. I live in a small city. On the map, it's known as Cass Lake, Minnesota, but we know it as Ga Miskwa Wako Kog, the place where there were red cedar trees. And many people know me as Elaine Fleming. You're welcome to call me. If you see me, you could call me Bejigo Benesi Akwe. So welcome to History of Leech Lake. I've been talking about historical trauma. And we on Leech Lake, we understood that horror of colonization. We had a rich trading history with the nations on Turtle Island, and we know Turtle Island as North America. You know, it's this time of year right now, it's the end of June. And as the highways heat up and the turtles, they come out to sun and they move around a lot. And so we look at those turtles in a very special way. We respect them and we understand the importance of us and to us in spirituality. So you always hear people talking about don't run over those turtles and get out of your car and help them across the road. And we do that too in my family. Well, we are all related and we are known as an oral people. So when we traveled, we shared stories on Turtle Island. We're all related. And that goes back, I mean, we talk about that in our legends too, about Nana Buju and his first children and who they are and where they traveled to the north and to the east, to the south and to the west, and how they had children in those places. And they're all known as Anishinaabeg. And so we're all related here on Turtle Island. Anyway, our relationships with each other is illustrated by a story about Nana Buju. Basil Johnston wrote that Nana Buju was ready to meet his father, a man he'd never known. Neither did he know his mother. His grandmother had raised him. This too illustrates the tragedy of colonization when death came to us through disease, violence, and boarding schools. Children were often raised by family members other than their own parents. At this time in his story, grandmother had died. She had told Nana Buju that his father, a Pingishmuk, lived in the west. So Nana Buju headed west. He had camped on the west side of a huge lake. And that evening, Nana Buju heard a beautiful song coming from across the lake. That song was so beautiful that Nana Buju was determined to find out the source of the song. He built a jima and a canoe and paddled east across the large lake. On the other shore, he found a beautiful lodge. There, a woman greeted him. She was the daughter of the doorkeeper of the West that he had met long ago when he'd gone in search of fire for Grandma. The woman told Nana Buju that she had been waiting for him. They eventually had four children, all sons. Each son traveled in a different direction once they got older. They traveled north, east, south, and west. In each of these directions, they were greeted by the doorkeepers of each direction. They were all welcomed to the new lands, and they were all gifted. In the north, sweetgrass was given. In the east, tobacco was given. In the south, cedar was given. And in the west, sage was given. All these gifts were medicines to help our people in difficult times. In each of these directions, the doorkeeper had a daughter who sat beside him. Nanabuju's four sons eventually had children with the daughters. Their children are people of all the nations that populate the four directions. All these people are called Anishinaabe because they are the descendants of Anishinaabe, who is also known as Nanabuju. So we are all related. Buju in Dinawe Magani Dug. Hello, my relatives. Nanabuju's story. And, you know, it talks about the women. And the women, they're in our legends, but they were removed from the writing of history because of who wrote the narrative. Fur traders, missionaries, Indian agents, mixed blood interpreters. Leading into the removal era was a time of grooming of the Ojibwe, getting us ready to cede our land. This period, from the point of view of the Ojibwe, is found through oral history and legends. It's found in stories that are passed down in families and teachings found on birch bark scrolls. It's found in songs. In Francis Densmore's book, Chippewa Customs, a narrative is found in the form of a drawing. It was made by an Ojibwe woman named Nawajibigokwe. And it tells a story of her great-grandmother, Little Woodfiber. And Little Woodfiber, she lived on the southern shore of Lake Winnebago-shish. The story is about a smallpox epidemic. It begins in a village on Leech Lake. A boy who was 12 to 14 years old was sick, and he left his village. Eventually, he found his way to the village on Lake Winnebago-shish, where some of his relatives lived. He was already broken out with smallpox. Many of the Ojibwe there wanted nothing to do with him. They even recommended killing him in order to prevent the disease from spreading amongst themselves. Some of the women told this little boy to go into every one of the wigwams. If he was exposed to everyone, maybe they wouldn't kill him. The Ojibwe, who hadn't already been exposed, escaped in canoes and started downriver in hopes of not being infected. Nawajibigokwe's great-grandmother was a member of the Eagle Clan. Consequently, one sees her as an eagle at the front of the canoe. And Little Woodfiber, she also took her mother and four brothers and sisters. The mother is seen sitting in the back of the boat, and since she is of the Bear Clan, one finds a bear there. The four boys and girls are seen as four upright lines in the middle of the canoe. The Ojibwe paddled down the Mississippi. When they got to Sandy Lake, the people there were dancing, singing, and playing the moccasin game. When they heard that the people were dying in great numbers at Lake Winnebago-shish, they panicked and jumped in their canoes and headed downriver too. Some of them caught up to the Winnebago-shish Ojibwe. Almost everyone was sick. A camp was made at Pine River for doctoring, but the great-grandmother continued past the camp. She was part of a group of 10 canoes of people. Eventually, they passed through Big Sandy Lake. By then, everyone got sick and died except for Little Woodfiber and her little sister. These two decided to return upriver to their people at Lake Winnebago-shish. On the way back, her younger sister died from smallpox. The great-grandmother took her on shore and dug a grave and buried her. Crying, she paddled on alone. The next morning, she had a vision in which she saw a canoe full of women and a canoe full of men. She also heard a voice telling her that these women and men were her descendants. On her journey home, she lived on berries, ducks, and raccoons. She finally came to a place where people survived the smallpox epidemic, and that's where she married a man, and they had many children. In this narrative about smallpox, an Ojibwe woman, Nawajibigokwe, tells a story of her great-grandmother, Little Woodfiber. The story was collected by Francis Densmore sometime between 1907 to 1917. Densmore's book, Chippewa Customs, was published in 1929. We're not told the age of the great-grandmother at the time nor the year when this happened. What we do know is that Little Woodfibre, the great-grandmother, took her mother and four of her brothers and sisters in a canoe in order to get away from the epidemic. And the end of the story, she's the only one to survive. Again, we remember what Robert Troyer wrote in the Purloined Language, Gateway to Ojibwe Soul, that between 1787 and 1887, approximately 60% of the Ojibwe people had died of disease. These times were ones of violence and disease for the Ojibwe people. Miigwech bisandawiyek, miigwech you all for listening. Meet you.